You're listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's live talk. I'm your host, Michelle Gasso. Today, the Corrections Connection will be looking at interoperability issues as they relate to corrections in the criminal justice field. Joining us today to discuss this topic is Dr. David Boyd. Dr. Boyd joined the Department of Homeland Security in March 2003 as Deputy Director of Operations for the Office of Research and Development and as Director of SAFECOM, where he is responsible for the national effort to achieve interoperability among communication systems of first responders at local, state, and federal levels. Prior to his position at the Department of Homeland Security, he was Director of Science and Technology for the National Institute of Justice, where he has served since 1992. He was also appointed in 1997 as Deputy Director of the National Institute of Justice itself. He has also served on the White House National Science and Technology Council, National Security Council Committee on Safety and Security of Public Facilities, and as Executive Chair of the Justice Department's Technology Policy Council. Prior to these positions, he served for more than 20 years in the U.S. Army, has published extensively in military, law enforcement, and technical journals, and is an adjunct professor of operations research and information technology at Capella University. Obviously well-equipped to talk with us today on our topic, and we welcome you to today's live talk, Dr. Boyd.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. First, I'd like to ask you about your post at the Department of Homeland Security. You're in charge of Project SAFECOM. What are the major goals of the project, and how would you say public safety agencies benefit from this particular project?
Well, SAFECOM was created as one of the 24 Presidential Management Agenda initiatives, sometimes called EGOV initiatives. And the purpose of SAFECOM is to establish interoperable communications. In other words, to make it possible for an officer at the scene of any incident to talk to whoever they need to, when they need to, and when properly authorized to do so, so that we can avoid the kinds of loss of life and hazard to property and safety that we had at Twin Towers when the fire department couldn't be alerted that the first building had collapsed. Mm-hmm. And so we think the major benefits for public safety agencies all come from that. An ability to coordinate with, to work with adjacent jurisdictions, with other disciplines within the same jurisdiction in a way that will save lives and protect property.
Excellent. How would you say your position at NIJ prepared you for this particular position?
Well, the major players in this community are public safety, and a major part of the public safety community, of course, is law enforcement. So in NIJ, we dealt a great deal with law enforcement and with the corrections community, and so it gave me a chance to learn to work with different disciplines. In the case of law enforcement and corrections, they're sort of related, but it gave me a chance to work with those different perspectives and different approaches to things, and allowed me to develop relationships that we draw on very heavily now in DHS and the program with the state and local community.
I see. Has interoperability between criminal justice and public safety agencies, has it improved, would you say, since 9/11?
I think it has. I don't think it's improved nearly as much as we needed to, but I think it's very clear that there are substantial improvements. One of the things 9/11 did, tragically, was to attract people's attention to the importance of interoperability. I remember in 1993, when I first started to put into place an interoperability project while I was still at Justice, the response I got from the boss was, interoperable what? We don't get that kind of answer now. Everybody understands how critically important interoperability is. And if you think about the way corrections facilities are deployed around the nation, it's virtually inevitable, and of course we have lots of experience, and we know that this happens, that from time to time the corrections facility needs to be able to talk to local first responders, whether it's fire personnel, emergency medical personnel, or law enforcement personnel who may be coming in to help with something or to help provide security or whatever. And so interoperability is as essential in that environment as it is in any other.
Mm-hmm. And how would you say corrections plays a role in this? Obviously they're not sort of the first responders, but they could be, I suppose.
It is conceivable that the corrections folks might play a major part, at least as part of the first responder community in a major special SWAT teams and the kinds of teams that operate in corrections facilities not being made available to a community that had suffered some massive catastrophic hit.
Right.
And so they will need to play a role, and they will need to be interoperable as well. We're just now beginning to look at how we can integrate the larger corrections community into the interoperability question. We know that they're part of statewide communication systems, and they tend to be looked at as kind of an island. We need to correct that. They need to come into the fold and be a part of the larger effort.
You're actually leading me into my next question, which is, how are agencies really preparing right now to face another emergency situation, either like 9/11 or similar to 9/11? And have they instituted some new technologies, or how are they sort of making their systems work?
Well, a lot of what's happening now amounts to effective planning and cooperation among agencies.
Okay.
So that if they do the planning up front and they figure out, for example, when they go out to buy new systems, that they buy systems that are more likely to be compatible, in particular with other jurisdictions, but also with other disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, makes a big difference. It is also true, however, that because of the way funding cycles work, radio communications, wireless communications in the United States tend to be based on systems with a life cycle that's 30 or 40 years long. Inside a tech, or I should say outside a technology life cycle, it's only 18 to 24 months long. So that means we have to figure out how to make really old technologies work with really modern technologies, because they'll tend to coexist in similar areas. And there are some technologies that are now available. We tend to refer to them as PAT systems. These are usually computer-driven boxes that allow you to connect a variety of radios so that one network can talk to the other. Now, they're not the most efficient approach. They're the best we can do now, given the state of technology.
Mm-hmm.
But they occupy what we call a channel pair on each of the two networks. But for near-term emergency capability, that's a great way to go. And so we've produced specifications and guidelines and information to help people put those things into place. And the department, in fact, the Department of Homeland Security, has helped to deploy a number of these systems. A few of these systems, in fact, have actually gone out to corrections agencies.
Oh, interesting. So that they can actually do some work on their end to communicate with other public safety.
Absolutely.
Excellent. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. David Boyd about interoperability and the criminal justice system and corrections. Getting back to our conversation, what would you say are some of the major efforts being made by SAFECOM in this arena, and what is SAFECOM doing to help agencies integrate?
Well, we've looked at it as what we call a system engineering problem. That is, that you need to think about the whole environment and the whole system that it fits in. And so we've started that kind of at the base. We've said, look, we've got to start with some foundation work even while we're doing actual deployments in the field. And so we created a statement of requirements, which is the first national, effectively, definition of interoperability that outlines against a set of major scenarios running from something as simple as a routine traffic stop all the way to a massive catastrophic explosion in a huge chemical plant. And we've used that to say, okay, what is it that the public safety community needs to be able to do? Who does it need to be able to communicate with? When? Under what circumstances? What quality of communications, etc.? That statement of requirements was published in April and is available on our website, which is safecomprogram.gov.
Great.
And you can go on there and download it. We've had thousands of downloads of it right now, and we're hoping to use it in part so that we can drive the industry rather than the industry telling us what we need. We wanted the public safety community to tell the industry what it needed. And so this statement of requirements was developed by players in the public safety community. We brought in law enforcement and medical, and we brought in local government activities and the rest to put all of this together.
That's
great. We're also going to be working on developing a baseline, that is, some way of identifying what the current state of interoperability is, on developing common standards so that we can actually help to migrate in the future toward interoperability. We've already produced common grant guidance to affect grants that go out into the field. And we've developed the portal that I just mentioned that also has a number of links to other sources.
Okay. What would you say are the expectations you have for SAFECOM coming down the road, and what will it be doing in future years?
Well, the Secretary of Homeland Security a few months ago asked us to develop a plan for a larger interoperability office, which looks not just at communications, but looks at all of the equipment and all of the training where interoperability is a major issue. So we make sure fire hoses can connect to the same things, that gas masks can work with other equipment that they have to work with. And so that is producing a much larger approach to interoperability in general, and will entail the development of future standards, the testing and demonstration of technologies to make sure they work, and the creation of programs like we did in Virginia, where we worked with the state of Virginia in helping them to develop a statewide communications interoperability plan. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that, because the level of interest and the level of emphasis on interoperability, especially in the homeland security environment, at the very highest levels is very, very strong.
That's right. Well, it looks like there's a lot that we can look forward to coming out of your offices. That concludes today's live talk. Thank you very much, Dr. David Boyd, for joining us today and providing us with an update on what's happening and what we can look for in the future.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks again, and thank you also to our audience for tuning in. For more information on corrections technologies, be sure to read this month's articles on corrections.com. For CCNN, I'm Michelle Gasso.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industries.